Hello there, my name's John Evington, and this is the Super Sound of Signal Radio, your new independent radio station.
On this special from Radio Today, we pay tribute to a great of our industry, and not just a great presenter, programmer, manager, consultant and mentor, but a great bloke. John Evington died on the 4th of December. He'd been in a coma for a week after being taken ill just days before his 63rd birthday. As well as a battle with cancer over the last 12 months, John had liver cirrhosis, which had first caused him issues over a decade ago.
I became quite ill in 2010. It was horrible. I never talk about this, but I was given 3 years to live, 2010. Liver disease, and it kind of completely knocked me off tilt. And so when I put the community license application together for Skipton, which is where we were living at the time, I kind of saw that as being my final, you know, few years in the business. God, it was a terrible episode. I was on holiday and nearly didn't come back. Basically, I lost about a year being unable to do much at all.
You might know John from his 22 years at Signal Radio, the latter part of that time in a group programming role with the Wireless Group. Or you might know him from his more recent work as a pioneer of small-scale DAB. However you knew him, you'll have memories that bring a smile to your face. Coming up, we'll hear from friends and colleagues from down the years in an industry he joined in 1978 at his local radio station, Piccadilly Radio in Manchester.
John Evington, Wednesday, Piccadilly Radio.
Robert Palmer, currently at 26 on the Piccadilly Hit 30. Following the news, the requests are 11 centigrade, 52 Fahrenheit. That's the northwest temperature. The time's now exactly 9 o'clock.
Piccadilly.
John Evington on Centre Radio.
With the breakfast show for a Tuesday morning, it's now 2.5 minutes to seven.
9 minutes to two is the time. You're listening to Afternoon Leicestershire with John Evington from Centre. Back after the break with a memory from Odyssey.
At the centre of everything in the afternoon. Centre Radio.
This is Signal Radio, the new independent station for Staffordshire and Cheshire on 257 and 104.3 stereo VHF. From me, John Evington, a very good morning to you, and a warm welcome to this, our first days of broadcasting, Monday, September the 5th.
Signal Radio News.
Well, it's a funny old world, isn't it? Just a few moments ago, it was Friday night, and now, in case you haven't noticed, it's Saturday morning already, and here we are together again at the start of the weekend. John Evington here on Radio 2 for the next couple of hours with some rather pleasant music. Good morning, it's Wednesday the 6th of June, and this is Independent Radio for Staffordshire, Cheshire and Shropshire. 257 metres, 1170 kilohertz, medium wave.
Just gone 11 minutes to 10 at Signal Gold. John Evington wishing you well this Monday morning. It's our first official day of broadcasting, Monday the 18th of January, 1993. And when I
had this obsession with radio, I always wanted to work in radio. Nobody works in radio. There weren't any radio stations back then apart from the Nationals. And when I once did mention that I had this ambition of working in radio, the careers teacher just laughed at me and kind of walked out of the room in disgust. It gave me some determination to kind of show everyone that I could do it.
John Evington, John Evington. Your favourite music, Signal Radio.
Wow, just a tiny selection of bits of John Evington, the presenter, from the early part of his 40-plus years in radio. I'm Stuart Clarkson, and after getting to know John through my work for Radio Today, he turned into a good friend during his time living just a few miles away from me in Skipton. I was part of his team that applied for a community radio licence in 2012, 2013, and I would often pop in to see him in his office above Cafe Nero on Skipton High Street. Well, I say his office, that's what he called it, but it turned out when I went for the first time that it was actually just the upstairs seating area at Cafe Nero. I'm so sad that we've lost John so suddenly this week. I hope he knew what a difference he made in our industry and to those that he worked with and knew. You're going to hear from some of them, and we'll hear a little more of John in his own words too, from an interview that he did with David Lloyd for the Conversations podcast in 2016. So many tributes. Where to start? How about Steve King, ex-EMAP and Bauer, and one of John's closest friends.
It would have been in August 1981 when a radio station was being set up in Leicester. It was called Centre Radio, and we met there. And John was Mr. Experience, as far as I was concerned. He was a little bit younger than me, but he was very experienced because he'd spent 3 years on Piccadilly Radio. I was about to do my first programme, September the 7th or the 8th, sometime around then. I was going to do my first programme, and I was terrified. And John was a great support to me during that period. He really sort of helped me through those early weeks. I was only doing one show a week. So it was through the early weeks that he helped me, and it was great. He was really... And we formed a friendship around that, you know, and he... I think originally he was taken on as a swing jock, but within about probably 6 months, John was, might have even been less than that, John ended up doing the breakfast show. So he was breakfast show presenter, and he was doing very well at it. And then I was put on late, so that really tested our friendship because we were on opposite ends of the day. I think we worked out at one point that the best time to meet each other, if you wanted to have a chat or have a coffee or something, would be 4 a.m. in the morning. I could stay on a bit and he could come in a bit early. But we managed, you know, we still saw quite a bit of each other. You could meet at midday as well. And our friendship sort of grew and developed from there. And then probably about, I think it was a couple of months before the demise of Centre Radio, John sensibly left. And he took up a post as breakfast show presenter at Signal Radio because, of course, he was the launch jock on breakfast at Signal Radio playing, I think it was Beautiful Noise they launched with. So he moved on and Centre Radio collapsed and I didn't move on. So I was left unemployed for a few months. But I got it back together and probably a few years later, because we stayed in touch. A few years later, we both found ourselves in the position of program controller. That went on for quite a while. So we would be regularly in touch, even though we didn't see that much of each other in this period because he was in Stoke and I was in Hull. And we were both kind of working and, you know, presenting shows and being program controllers. But we had a lot of contact. We were in competition, of course, with talent, but we were also in competition with audience figures. And Signal always seemed to do better than everybody.
Yeah. And in terms of that friendship that you developed with him, you know, what was it about John that you liked and that made you want to be his mate?
I think there are two things really that stick out. Some of it comes through from many other people in the comments that you see on his Facebook page. Kindness is, that's the way a lot of people describe John. And that really comes through strongly from the minute you meet him. And that was my first experience of him, of course, because he was helping me out. He'd need to. I was new and I was... You know, didn't really know what I was doing. Probably still don't, he would probably say, because he was very kind. And the other thing with John was that I loved his humour. It was very humorous, a great sense of irony as well. And so we would laugh our way through many a conversation. And we certainly, when we caught up with each other again, we started to catch up with each other on a more regular basis around the beginning of this year. When John moved back to Leicester, and we saw an awful lot of each other because we ended up being just a few miles from each other. And he reminded me again of his, not only his kindness, but also of his great sense of humour. And we had a fantastic time reminiscing about our days in radio, particularly at Centre Radio. John then introduced us to Jo, my wife and I, and then we met as a foursome, you know, sort of fairly regularly throughout the summer this year and got to know Jo very well.
And the last 12 months, obviously people know about his cancer diagnosis and the treatment that he managed to get, and, you know, the prognosis was looking good from that. He did an abseil, you know, down the side of the hospital building in September. So
he did.
People who know him on Facebook have seen that he's been on holidays all over the place. He looked very well and he was doing all right, wasn't he?
I mean, he was having a great time. And John was always very positive about his condition, very positive indeed. But at the same time, I think he realised that he better make the most of his time. And that's what he and Jo were certainly spending the last 12 months doing. I mean, they went everywhere. They went on holiday. They travelled all over the UK. They visited all their favourite haunts. John was catching up with friends all over the country. You probably can track that back through Facebook. So I think, whilst he didn't see, you know, this coming immediately, I think he knew that, you know, he'd better enjoy himself while he could because he didn't know what was around the corner.
And how do you think the industry will remember John most?
He was an industry great, really. I mean, John we worked out that between the two of us, we probably know just about everybody in the industry, because anybody I didn't know, John did, and anybody he didn't know, I did. It was a bit like that, really. He was at a senior level for such a long time. I mean, he made an enormous contribution to commercial radio, and I think that should probably be how he is remembered.
And still making a difference in the digital space as well, with the new companies that he'd been working on with David.
Yeah, we had a few talks about that, because I got involved in DAB license applications whilst I was with EMAP back in 1996, when I was involved in the first few. And of course, John was still developing it and still giving people chances, people opportunities, and new radio groups opportunities, right up to the point at which he became too ill to do it.
Well, we're going to hear lots of tributes on this podcast. So thanks for talking to us, Steve. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Steve King. In the last decade, John worked with countless local radio stations, community and commercial, through his companies, The Radio People, Niocast, Viomux, and his business partner through those days has been David Duffy.
Hello, John. Just one final note from me to let you know how much I enjoyed working with you, and how much you're going to be missed by me and so many other people. 8 years working together, and it went by in the blink of an eye. But you haven't managed to slip off the radio dial for the final time without a few people noticing. Dave Timpson at RTE has been in touch to say what a wonderful, kind and gentle soul you were. What I remember is you getting a selfie under that RTE sign and us missing our airport connection. Too many people to mention have said how grateful they are for the opportunities you gave them in the early part of their career, which is nice. Paul Holmes from Real World got his first ever PD job from you. And Pete Pennington, who I remember as the breakfast jock at YRFM in Warrington, got his first break in commercial radio at Signal One from you. And do you remember Gary Burgess, who was on ITV in the Channel Islands? He said you encouraged him constantly throughout his radio career. And do you remember Andy Griffiths, who worked at the Wireless Group while you were there? He said, in an industry full of loudmouths and big egos, John was someone I could trust, respect and learn from. It's fair to say most people were totally shocked. They described you as generous, genuine, enthusiastic, honest, with a deep passion for radio. It's almost the perfect CV. For me, I will always remember your insistence on wearing jeans to every customer meeting, so that they would know who the programmer was. And when we all ordered coffees, you would order hot chocolate with all the trimmings, and that meant squirty cream and marshmallows. You had to use a broadcast quality microphone for Zoom and have it in full view. In fact, you're probably listening to this totally appalled that I recorded it on an iPhone. You know, old radio waves never die. Your voice is hurtling across the universe right now, looking for a new audience. I'll miss you, my old friend. Good night and Godspeed.
Thank you, David. A lovely letter to our friend John. Now let's take you to the heyday of Signal Radio, where for a period in the late 80s and early 90s, the station's programming duo were John and Terry Underhill.
Good morning, world. It's a brand new day. Feeling fine. I've got Signal all the way. Nothing's gonna stop us now.
So, Terry, tell me about the first time you met John. It would have been mid-80s, I guess.
Yeah, it was about 1986 when we first met. And it was one of those trips. We were both on holiday. We just bumped into one another and we got chatting away. And it was immediately apparent. And anybody who knew John knew that he was just the nicest person that you're ever going to meet. He had that dry sense of humour, but he had that wonderful sense of mischief. And we met him in a bar in a hotel, and his wife at the time, Sally, and my wife, Julie, we were all there, and we just immediately hit it off, and there was no question we were going to work together. It was just a friendship. And I just remember thinking the first time I met him, you know, and I knew of John. I was working at the time at Marcher, and you could hear Signal everywhere. And of course, I listened to Signal. I loved Signal because it was a really cool radio station with great processing, fabulous jingles, and John was the breakfast presenter. So that was the first time we met, and it was sometime later, maybe a year later, where he rang me and said, you know, that he was about to come off air. He was the original launch presenter, of course, at Signal, and he was about to come off air. I was doing breakfast at Marcher, and he asked if I'd be interested in going to work there. And of course, my first inclination was, oh, I'd love to work with John. But then I drove to Stoke-on-Trent and decided that perhaps wouldn't want to work it for John. But what happened, our friendship and of course the offer increased. Thank you, John. The offer increased as more times I said no, then obviously it got a better a deal. So I decided I'd give it a chance. So I took over from John, huge shoes to fill, literally and metaphorically, because he'd done spectacularly well. The radar figures, I think they may have even been Jicara then, for that station were absolutely off the scale. But I thought, no, I'm going to take the challenge, and had an amazing start at Signal and an amazing time with John and with the team there at the time.
What was he like to work with as a boss? So you were the breakfast presenter and he was your PD, essentially.
Yeah, and I was taken on as head of presentation and breakfast presenter. But the thing about John was that I immediately realised, for the first time, I think, in my radio career at that point, somebody who says something is going to happen actually did. I'd been filled with, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and so on. But then it never did. When I started working for John, if he came up with an idea and he came up with a suggestion or he wanted to follow something through that would work for the radio station, it actually happened. And that was a huge surprise to me because he was just an honest, genuine person. Everyone talks about his sense of mischief and his fantastic personality and his great ability on air. And anybody who heard him on Radio 2 or on Signal would tell you that he was a great broadcaster. And I just loved his honesty and his sense of fun. The one thing about Signal in those days was it was a very different world. You know, you'd get to lunchtime and it was, right, we're all going to the pub, and you'd go on the way home, oh, we'll all go to the pub. And it was like a friendship and a family. It was certainly not like an employee-employer relationship. And they were really happy times.
And I think you spent 6 years together at Signal, essentially as his de facto number two, running the radio station. So you're kind of a double act that were quite well known in the industry at that time.
Apparently so, yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because although John and I kept in touch right up until just a few days before we sadly lost him, the reality is the industry, I was hearing from people I hadn't spoken to for years, in some cases decades, getting texts and calls and everything. And looking back, it's all those people, those record company people, are the radio stations, are the programmers and directors of stations, who seem to remember that John and I would be sort of, you know, little and large. We'd turn up together wherever we were. It's interesting because I put a picture on Facebook, some people may have seen it, of John and I, that was taken actually just last year. And it was the last time we physically saw one another. And what people will notice if they look at that picture is we're exactly the same height, which is miraculous because John was over 6 foot and I'm under five. Not quite. But what I'm going to do, when the dust settles, I'm going to put a little cheeky video of that because it was one of those live pictures. And you can see actually what he did when I said to him, John, please don't make me look short. And so he just positioned himself perfectly. But when I play the video of that, you can see him, see how tall he really is. But that was just John's sense of humour and personality.
And such a positive outlook on everything. I mean, I've known him for the last 10 years or so, and you know, he'd been ill, he'd got better from that. We thought, but perhaps not in the long term, his other illness that he'd had over the last year or so as well, just still wanting to live life and do everything.
Yeah, and I think that typifies John, because you know what he wasn't going to do was just going to sit down and give in. What I loved over the last year, as you said, Stuart, and you were a great friend to him, and what I loved about John was that his sense of positivity, he set up this WhatsApp group, and it would be filled not with doom and gloom, but it would fill it with all the positive stuff, what happened, what tests, what he thinks is going to happen. And actually, it's been a really sad year for me because a very close friend, not in radio, but a very close friend of mine, also died this year from liver cancer. And what I was able to do, when John rang me and told me that he had this, we did a FaceTime video and he told me about this condition, again, laughing, joking, making light of it, not allowing it to define his personality, which is just typically John. And what I was able to do was to put him in touch with my friend Nancy, who he knew because she came over to work at Signal. She lived in America and she came over to work at Signal for a year, lived at our house round the corner from John's. He knew her very well, but he hadn't spoken to her for 30 years. And when I said to him, she's got exactly the same condition as you, I put them both together. They talked every single day and they were an absolutely wonderful comfort for one another. And that fills me with some sense of happiness that they found a reconnection to be able to talk about a shared terrible moment that they were going through. We sadly lost her, but John was seemingly doing really well. He was, in my view, I thought, in fact, only literally 3 days before he fell into the coma, we were sharing videos. He went on holiday this year and I'm going to a similar place, and we were just sending videos to one another. I've got this video. I'm so thrilled that he sent it to me, of him just goofing about on a boat, just pretending to dance and doing typical John things. And it's the most precious video. And it just brings John back to life every time I look at it. And I love it so much.
Yeah, I've been doing the same, looking through my texts and emails from John over the years as well. And there's so many kind of good memories there. What do you think you will remember him for most, and how will you remember him?
It's always a difficult one to answer, because you don't want to even think about the fact that he's no longer here. But on the basis that in life, unless you live with somebody and you're with them 24/7, there are periods where you're not together. There might be weeks, months, or even in some cases, years where you don't talk to somebody. It doesn't mean they're not there. It just means that you're not physically seeing them. So to me, John will always be around. John will always be that absolutely cheeky, mischievous, brilliantly talented radio person. He'll never go away. And I don't think for anybody who ever met him, anybody who was ever fortunate enough to meet John, either work with John, meet him socially, even just casual acquaintances, you won't fail to have been impressed by him. And I think for me, he's a real, real superstar that we've lost, but we'll never forget. And as I said, in my life, you know, he'll always be there.
Hello, this is Phil Trow, and it's a pleasure to be asked to say a few words about John Evington. John gave me my first job in radio in 1986 at Signal Radio. Stayed there for 4 very happy years, really enjoyed it. I've always said that John was brilliant at allowing the radio presenters at the time to basically do what we felt was right to do. That provided some of the best and maybe some of the worst radio, but you know, we learned from it, and I think the important thing was the listeners were with us as well. He certainly knew how to program a radio station. And if I've got one memory of John, because John had a very mischievous side to him, it was just after we'd commissioned a new set of jingles, and these had come from America, from Jam. And we were in the commercial production studio one day, and there were 4 or 5 people gathered round, and they said, right, we've got your jingle. And I was like, oh, how exciting. And they said, there is a bit of a problem, though, because when we sent the pronunciation for your name, we said that it was pronounced as in Phil T. Rowe, a boat. So they said, this is how it's turned out. And the jingle went, Phil T. Rowe. And I was stood there horrified, thinking, oh, my goodness, this is a bit embarrassing, isn't it? And rather than say, don't worry, we're getting it remade, they said, actually, it's a little bit too expensive to get the singers back in the studio. So you're okay in future to be called Phil T. Rowe. And of course, as a 19-year-old eager to please, I shook my head and I said, yes, of course I will. So I potentially could have become Phil T. Rowe from that moment on, until I saw all the smiles and everybody bursting into hysterical laughter. Yes, John Evington 1, Phil Trow 0, or Phil T. Rowe.
This is Martin Campbell. I was so sorry to read about John Evington from my years in the Radio Authority and Ofcom, as well as Radio Proper, if you like. I met John on many, many occasions, and I was always so pleased to meet him and to see him. A real gent, and someone who's done so many things that would live on in radio as well. Always happy, always a nice guy to meet, and yeah, really, in radio, one of the good guys. So RIP, John.
Hello, I'm Trevor Thomas. John was my inspiration for getting to do what I dreamt of doing in my professional working life. One of my first bosses, a guiding light and a kindred spirit. Yes, I bombarded him with demo tapes because I wanted to be on the radio and I wanted to be on his radio station and my local station, Signal Radio. Our first meeting was to listen, but not to listen particularly to my demos, but to some miscellaneous recordings of different stations, because that's what John was. He was proud to be an enthusiast of the industry, and he knew how to get the best out of people. He listened intently to a comprehensive documentary I'd put together on the first 5 years of Signal Radio. We kept in touch. I did some more hospital radio. I worked on my craft. I did some radio Top Shop. And then he gave me a dream opportunity to become the broadcast assistant at KFM, the incremental station which Signal had acquired in 1990. I used to cart up the ads, I used to do the What's On diary, take the radio car out, print the selector logs, And the cherry on top of the cake was to do the early show, 5 till 7 a.m. every day, Monday to Friday, and then produce the breakfast show, which was hosted by another legend I'd grown up listening to on Piccadilly, Pete Baker. John was my first boss for the 2 years which followed. KFM became Signal Cheshire. I got the chance to go over to Paris. We were one of the first stations to broadcast from Euro Disney. Got to interview this up-and-coming band called Take That. And then when the time came around, he encouraged me to move on and try and seek out new opportunities, just like he'd done years and years earlier with Centre Radio and then becoming the first voice on Signal Radio. I know for a fact I'm just one of countless people who John gave that big break to. And I just want to say thank you. I can't believe you're gone, John, but one thing I do know is that you'll never, ever be forgotten in this fine industry of ours.
Here's another Signal colleague, Jason Hardy.
I first met John Evington back in 1988, but I first heard his dulcet tones in 1983, as he was the first voice on my local radio station at the time, Signal Radio. Living in Stoke-on-Trent, heard this radio station come on air for the very first time, and heard John Evington open up the station and then introducing its first song, Neil Diamond's Beautiful Noise. And I said to my mum at that time, I'm going to work for that radio station. I'm going to be a DJ on my local radio station. 1988 came along, and after a lot of demos, a lot of persuasions, a lot of knocking on the door, a lot of hanging around, becoming a bit of a nuisance, I managed to get into Signal to answer the phones for then the Sunday afternoon programme with Mel Scholes. That soon moved on to working on the phones on the evening show with Neil Atkinson at the time. And while there, ended up doing a few demos. And John Evington said, yeah, okay, we'll try one weekend overnights. And never looked back. If it wasn't for John, I wouldn't be doing what I love doing. I don't think of this as work. It's my hobby, and I've been doing it now for the past 33, 34 years, and it's all down to John Evington, who gave me that chance, who gave me loads of advice. One of the things I always remember was not being very one-to-one when it came to the radio, and he came in one morning and said, I've been listening, and you're not being one-to-one. Didn't quite understand what he meant. And he explained that radio was a one-to-one forum. So he drew this face on a piece of paper, stuck it on the mic, and said, right, treat that face as a person. You are talking to that one person and nobody else. And since that date, that has stuck in my head. And always thought of just one person while presenting my radio shows. So that's one of many, many advice that I got from John. Worked at Signal for a good, from 1988 to 1996 before moving to Radio City. And even when I left, stayed in touch with John, asking for advice. When things got a little bit tough in this business that we call radio, not getting contracts renewed, he was always there to give me a little bit of support and also rehire me again. Went back to Signal about 3 or 4 times. And then when I did finally leave after joining the BBC full time, he got in touch with me in the past couple of years to start some online radio stations. Albert Dock Radio, one of them, Heatwave Hits Radio, Radio Wirral. And it was all down to John contacting me, believing in me, as I believed in him. It's going to be a sad loss. I was only speaking to him a few months back, and he said, oh, yeah, there's a few life-changing situations coming up, but I'll be okay. It's a sad affair, and it feels like just part of me's been taken away. That little safety net, which I've had for the past 30-odd years, is no longer there. John, thank you for everything. And I'm going to miss you. All the very best. Rest in peace, my friend. Until we see each other again, take care.
Hello, it's Paul Chandler here from Fix Radio and Podcast Radio and all sorts of other things. very, very sad to hear the news at the weekend of the wonderful John Evington, who I knew for 30 years or so, I suppose. A fantastic radio programmer, full of knowledge. And as Phil Riley said, I think on Twitter, someone who was really had radio's interests at heart, radio as a whole, and also a top bloke. Our paths first crossed, I think, many times, but I particularly remember a great trip that we did to Dallas in the early 90s. I was working at the time as PD for the Hot FM, Chilton Radio Group, and John was working as PD for Signal Radio, I think, in Stoke-on-Trent. And it was in the days before you had ISDN or ways of remotely directing jingle sessions. And so it was a terrible burden, but we both had to fly over to Dallas to supervise the recording sessions. and it was a great trip. And we were taken to JAMS, which is the famous worldwide headquarters of the jingle company. They were making all of our jingles, custom-made packages with the famous JAMS singers, and it was a fantastic experience. And I remember one night going out for dinner with John and John Wolfert, who was the guy who ran JAMS. We went for dinner, and then afterwards John invited us to go for a little flight in his aircraft, and he had a small private plane, and we drove to the airfield, and he sort of pulled it out of the hangar, and we all got in, and I, you know, being the size I am, I'm pretty fat, and managed to squeeze in to the back of the plane, and we did a fantastic night trip across Dallas in John's plane, and it was very memorable. And both John and I afterwards we always used to remind ourselves when we met subsequently of that lovely evening where we flew over Dallas with the man who made so many wonderful radio jingles. So yeah, John, a lovely man, and will be sorely missed by myself and I suspect the whole of the radio industry. Thank you for letting me have the opportunity to bring that memory to the fore.
Here's Phil England.
So many happy memories of working with John. Where do you start? I was a sales guy, but John actually gave me the opportunity to do a show live on air on Signal, and I was forever grateful. He once complimented me. I had a feature called Zero Talk, and according to John, this was the best feature I ever did because I didn't say anything.
Hi, this is James Pycos. I was really saddened to see the passing of John Evington reported on radio today this morning. And I just thought of a memory of my first dealing with John when I just started in my first paid work in radio, working in Traffic Link at the top of the Portland Tower in Manchester. And to suddenly be thrown on all these big radio stations with virtually no experience was really exciting and really daunting and a bit of a roller coaster for me at the time. I think I was a little bit out of my depth. Well, I certainly was the morning John called and rang me very calmly after a bulletin on Signal One and said, James, can you tell me what's a unit failure? And in that moment, I immediately realized what John's point was, that I was taking this technical jargon and spewing it out on air and not speaking in the same language that a listener might. I said, John, it's a broken down train. He said, yeah, it is. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Can you say that next time? So that was quite a valuable and important lesson for me to speak in plain English. John went on to be a really helpful mentor and gave me a lot of encouragement and support throughout my career. So I'm really sad to hear about his passing.
Hello, my name's Paul Carrington. I first met John in July 1990. I'd received a call from him asking me to pop over to Stockport for a chat. I was working at Piccadilly Radio in Manchester at the time, and there was an on-air reshuffle that for me meant coming off air and going back into the production department, something that I didn't really want to do. I just wanted to stay on air, and so John's call couldn't have come at a better time. Signal had just acquired KFM Radio in Stockport, and he wanted to offer me the late night show, doing what I'd done at Piccadilly a year or so earlier, which was this, I don't know, crazy, madcap, nonsense, noisy racket of a show. Anyway, when I met him, we clicked straight away, and he spoke fondly of his time at Piccadilly, but also how Signal had great plans as well. He was very quiet, gentle and understated, though I'm not sure if he kept that calm composure when he heard my first show. I was only at KFM for a couple of months before relocating to Stoke for what were to become some of the happiest days of my life. Since John's untimely passing, I've thought a lot about how he helped steer my career development. I will always owe him an enormous debt of gratitude for giving me the creative freedom no other programme director has done since. He would encourage me to take risks and to be as inventive as my own imagination would allow. Of course, he would gently keep me in check if I overstepped the mark, but always encouraging. He reminded me many years later that he still encountered members of my on-air team who were now working full-time at some of the radio stations he was involved with, and in particular the occasion that the creative writer at one of the stations under his watch accosted him one day by saying she was formerly Nurse Legover from the Funster Show. John liked to take a few calculated risks, and he persuaded me to take over The Breakfast Show, which, to be honest, I didn't think I was ready for, or really would be any good at. However, under John's guidance, the show picked up a bronze award in the 1993 Sony Radio Awards, which I think he was actually quite proud of as well. I look back at those halcyon days with great fondness, and my life is the richer for having known John. Goodbye, my old friend. You will be remembered.
I'm Johnny Beeling, and I used to be controller of Radio 1. Nowadays, I'm a broadcaster on Serenade Radio. Many years ago, when I moved up north to Skipton, one of the people who befriended me was a neighbour, John Evington. And although we never came across each other when I was at Radio 1, we both shared a background in radio and became good pals. We even put in a joint bid to set up a community station, Radio Skipton, and shared our disappointment when the bid failed. Our paths have separated in recent years, but we always kept in touch. From time to time, we'd meet up for a convivial lunch with other radio folk in the area. You, Stuart, John Foster, Stephanie Hurst, and of course, John. Happy memories of all of us chewing the fat about the latest gossip, developments and news of our business. All of which makes us even more sad, knowing this lovely man has left us for that radio station in the sky. Even as I speak, I suspect he's up there somewhere, offering St. Peter a few production tips on his Welcome to Heaven presentation. He may have commissioned a jingle or two. I can just imagine him suggesting a jingle with the lyric, "It's heaven up here, DAB's lovely and clear, tuned to Angel Radio." But more seriously, I shall miss his knowledge, his wisdom, and his enthusiasm for our medium. John was a great guy, gentle, wise and happy, and I'm very sad to say farewell to such a good man.
Another big voice from Signal now, Barry David.
John Evington was a true radio anorak just like me. He called me the Scouse Plumber, as that was my day job when I first met him at Signal Radio. I hosted shows on Signal Radio and breakfast on Echo 96. Now, Echo was John's baby. A radio station for Stoke, Stafford and Cheshire, but playing Led Zeppelin and more all day, every day. The jingles broke away from the norm, as used on ILR. Scripts like "Riding Rainbows, Echo 96. Even John couldn't tell me the meaning. We have lost a radio great. I just don't think there are people in the industry with the same enthusiasm. But I could be wrong.
Ray Crowther is another former colleague who got his break from John and is now part of the team at Stafford FM.
John Evington is a true legend in the world of radio and gave me my first ever show with Signal Radio in Stoke-on-Trent back in 1986. John Evington has been a major influence on my career and was also instrumental in Stafford FM winning its community radio licence in 2015. His passion for radio and recognising and nurturing new talent was incredible. There are so many household names now in the world of entertainment that John gave their first break to, and for that they and me all owe him a huge debt of gratitude. John, you are simply one of a kind. Thank you so much for all you did for me and for Stafford FM.
Now let's hear from Magic's Jim Davis. Jim.
Hi Stuart, thank you for putting together this tribute podcast. I owe John Evington so much, and I never really got the chance to say how grateful I was to him. I dreamt of working in radio for years as I was growing up, grafting at Hospital Radio in Maidenhead and then listening avidly to Radio 1 and Capital. And then when I moved to the Northwest in 1996, I think it was, I decided I wasn't going to wait any longer. So I put together a rather shaky demo after hours in the pub I was working at, because they had a mixing desk there. And then at one in the morning, after I'd finished a shift, I put it through the door of Signal Radio in Stoke-on-Trent. And, well, lo and behold, a few weeks later, I got a call from John inviting me to pop in his unique way. I started at Signal presenting the late-night love affair and eventually moving to the breakfast show. And I can't believe it, but next year marks my 25th anniversary in radio, having worked all over the country at stations like Century, Heart, LBC, most recently BBC Radio 5 Live, of course, and Magic. And I owe so much to John just for starting me out and guiding me, nurturing me, often reassuring me when I was so full of self-doubt and encouraging me to go further. Look, I'm not going to lie, he was infuriating at times, but he was rarely wrong. And I still find myself now relying on so many of the lessons that he taught me all those years ago. So thank you, John. You will be greatly missed.
This is Steve Penk. I have many great memories of John, but one of my earliest was the many laughs we had, and his brilliant sense of humour and his remarkable talent for mimicry. When John first joined Piccadilly Radio, he was a TO, technical operator. And the TOs at Piccadilly Radio had an area in the newsroom where John could often be found doing his impressions of all the presenters on the station at the time. And there was one particular presenter that John was brilliant at, and that was a guy called Tony Emerson. Now, Tony, in the main, did the overnight show. It was called Nightbeat. He was on air from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. Tony, sadly, no longer with us. But John almost became obsessed with Tony. And his impression of Tony was laugh-out-loud funny. And Tony was often, shall we say, a little accident-prone on air. In fact, Tony once actually fell asleep on air mid-show. And it was John that heard this, because John was travelling home, switched on his radio, and all he could hear was and it's the days, of course, when all the music we played was off vinyl. So John turned the car around, went back to the radio station, walked in the on-air studio, and there was Tony, fast asleep. He kind of slumped on the desk and fallen asleep. And all you could hear on the air was the record had finished and it was going round at the end. So John obviously woke him up. But before he left the radio station, he obviously took that little bit of audio off the logging tape, put it onto cart so that we could all enjoy that moment. But John could often be found in the newsroom with his collection of carts, mainly of Tony Emerson mistakes, and holding court doing his impression. Fantastic radio memory. I first met John probably around kind of late 1978, early 1979. I'd been at the radio station for about 6 months. And when John joined, he was one of those people in life that when you first meet him, you just instantly liked him. He was just one of those people. In all the time that I knew John, I never once saw him shout or raise his voice or get angry. He was just one of life's gentle people. And John was my first thought, in fact, when I was looking for someone to run the revolution for me when I bought the radio station back in 2008. And at that point, during the 5.5 years that I owned the revolution, we probably spent the most time together that we'd ever spent since we'd first met all those years earlier. And John, for me, he just never changed. He was the same easygoing, laid-back, you know, gentle sort of guy that I'd always known. And obviously there are many stories to tell, many memories across the 43 years that I knew him. But he was someone that you could always rely on. We spent hours and hours on the phone as well, you know, since the days of the revolution, and, you know, swapping ideas and discussing the industry. And I just always enjoyed, you know, our conversations and our time together. So thank you, John, for the many laughs we had, the many stories we told each other. But most of all, thank you for your friendship and for just being a lovely guy. I'll miss you, buddy.
Thank you, Steve. Now, let's go to 1999. Signal, along with a handful of other radio stations, were bought by Kelvin McKenzie's The Wireless Group. Here's John to take up the story.
Well, we all went and Googled Kelvin McKenzie, and it made very interesting reading. And one of the things that caught my eye was Kelvin's attitude towards people who've been in the same role for more than 3 or 4 years. Not very impressed, he isn't, by anyone who stays in the same role for more than a couple of years. The deal went through, and Kelvin came on a grand tour to meet the management teams at each of the radio stations. And I'll never forget that first meeting with Kelvin. He was fine. He was very interested in what we'd done over the years, and keen to find out about the station and the area and the opportunities for his new group. And then the question I was hoping he wouldn't ask me, he asked me. So how long have you been here then? And I just smiled and said, Kelvin, you don't want to know. Come on, how long? 16 years. The air went blue. 16 years in Stoke-on-Trent, the graveyard of ambition. And he gave me a fair amount of grief over that.
John, the most engaging of people, of all the people I've met in radio, you couldn't meet anybody who was a nicer, wanting to be part of a team guy, right? 101%. You know, I employed loads of people and he was number one in that. I honestly don't think it's a good idea for people to stay in their jobs for years on end. And especially if you're in a big company like Signal, very successful, right? So I asked him, I said, how long have you been at Signal? Expecting him to say something like, I don't know, 5, 7 years. He says 16 years. Basically, the world could come to an end in 16 years. You know what I mean? I thought it's better that you get out and about. So nevertheless, rather than it ending, he actually changed my view of if you have a very good guy running your business. And, you know, in essence, if you get the music wrong, you are in big trouble early on, because what happens is, for some reason, the audience seem to know that the music's wrong before the management do. And so by the time you get some dodgy radio in which you find that the only people now listening to you are over 94 and that they are in a class where the advertiser doesn't want to meet them, and you suddenly discover that the PD is a complete idiot. But you didn't know. I mean, what do I know about it? I only ever used to say one thing to John and to any PD. I said, I think what we need a bit more Robbie Williams. Now, if I said that now, I'd probably be marched out of the building. But at the time, it seemed to be reasonably appropriate. What used to happen with John and with other PDs within that group was that they used to nod sagely at me, smile. And what used to happen was, if you get some bloke who turns up who clearly, you know, his interest in music died when one of the Everly brothers fell off the peg, right? What they do is they nod, but actually they're shaking their heads at the same time. So you end up, the clever ones like John would actually, who was really quite interested allegedly in what you were saying, was actually moving his head round in a circular motion so that at any time he was neither agreeing with you nor disagreeing with you, but was thinking to himself, with a bit of luck, this bloke will be buggering off and we won't see him for a while. I won't have to listen to this rubbish. Remember, John had been around. He had been in this kind of business literally all his life. And he did know. And the difference between him and I is I didn't know. So in the end, because of the way he presented himself, eventually you'd say, John, it's your skill set. You carry on. And the truth about the matter, he never let you down. And if you disagreed with him, which I didn't disagree with him, he would send you a note explaining the whys of it all. That kind of person, I think, is rarer and rarer in the radio business simply because versions of AI have effectively taken over.
And if you looked at you and John side by side, people would say, how did you ever get on? How did you have a working relationship? Because you're quite known for being quite outspoken and perhaps would shout at people, whereas John was very quiet and reserved.
Right. Well, in the end of the day, thank you for putting it like that. So I actually think that there has been a kind of massive transformation. Me shouting at people, that cannot happen today. It simply cannot happen because two things happen, and this is where big business has had to swallow this. is that they can't have a shouter because the message gets round, and in the end of the day, good people won't work for you. It's quite an interesting point. But what happened was so John didn't become like me. He didn't start shouting and hollering and throwing bloody teacups around. And I had to become more like John. What would be the point of going completely mad at John? There was no point. He knew more than I did. And my job was to find out the best out of him, not the other way around.
As a businessman running a big radio company, having people like John on your team made you a winner.
We had lots of reasonably talented colleagues, but honestly, John had something else about him. And the other thing was that John could carry a team with him. You never got a secret email, as you did with other colleagues, you know, because there's a lot of, in the radio business, there's a lot of the polishing of the stairs. There's a lot of that in every industry, but there's a rather sophistication to radio, in which the expression which you sometimes see on television, whenever a decision's made, are very brave, very brave. Well, John Murray wasn't like that. Here are the numbers. This works. This has worked before. And this will work again, right? So John, first-class guy, love working with him. Shame he's gone.
And during your time working together when he was your group PD for a few years, obviously one of the regular things that would happen every 3 months would John would need to report into you about the Rajar figures. And I guess that was an interesting time because of your views on the matter.
Right. Well, John did believe in it. It was a guiding light. And within the radio industry, it is utterly beyond me why intelligent commercial people would soak up these load of old nonsenses about people wandering around with pieces of paper, ticking boxes saying they listened a quarter of an hour or something or other. A complete waste of time. For John, this was obviously a difficult difficult thing, you know, ringing up and telling you that some clapped-out station in the middle of nowhere had suddenly doubled its audience in a month, or some quite well-in-the-community station that, in fact, actually, they'd lost 28% of the audience. And the great thing about Rajar is there's always some good news in it. So, you know, so somebody like John, well, if we hadn't done very well in the 15 to 24ers, actually, Kelvin, I said, oh, right, well, that's a shame. He said, but there's been an absolute triumph in the 80 pluses. Right. I said, is that a good thing, John? Oh, yes, it shows that our policy is working. Look, at the end of the day, John's job was to try and make good news out of sometimes things that weren't necessarily good news. But that's the job of all the PDs, isn't it? They're always looking for the piece of gold hidden among the anthracite. And John was a triumph for that.
People used to collar me at industry events. Oh, God, you poor bastard. What's it like with Kelvin and Rajar? I bet it's awful. Towards the end, it was a breeze because Rajar had come in, usual thing, some good ones, some bad ones, some OKs. Hi, Kelvin. Right, come on, what's happened? Well, Stigl's done well, Stokes done okay, Pulse is down a tad, Swansea's performed brilliantly, and you don't want to know about the rest. Go on, tell me. Well, come on, Kelvin, it's radio. You know it's a load of bollocks, don't you? Yeah, you're right, matey. Bye. 102.6 FM, Signal 1. I can't think of a time when I woke up in the morning and didn't want to go to work. There's just something about this business that energises me. I'm lucky in that I've had a lot of very different experience. I've worked at small stations, big stations. I've presented at national level on Radio 2. I've presented on the smallest of stations. But the job's the job. First thing in the morning, there's a friendly voice that says hello. Tells me the time, if it's gonna be fine, or if it's gonna snow. I can still remember those early days when I was working overnights at Piccadilly. I'd get home and think to myself, this is a phase I'm going through. This is not a career, this is a phase. And I'll get it out of my system and then I'll find a proper job and go through life like everybody else. Here we are, 40 years on almost, and I've done pretty much everything I ever wanted to do in terms of broadcasting. It was always an ambition to be on national radio. Well, I did that. Not for long, but I did it and quite enjoyed it. All of the while.
27 minutes past four. Radio 2 with you on a Sunday morning. John Evington Rail till 6 o'clock.
I think the closer you are to your listener and your audience, the more rewarding it is.
My name's John Evington, and I'll be your host each weekday morning between 6 and 9 with a mixture of music, news and information, which I hope you'll soon get into the habit of waking up to.
On every level, I've enjoyed this career, and it sounds like a blooming obituary, doesn't it? Yeah.
Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.